is the Desperate Mothers Podcast.
Then you're thinking about it. Snickers butt, Snickers mouth, Snickers butt.
Oh my. Check out what these desperate motherfuckers are up to this week.
Okay.
Let's light this candle.
All right, welcome to the Desperate Mothers Podcast. I'm CJ Watson.
I'm Jason Rice.
And I'm Jack Fisher.
And we'll just jump right into Comic Book Club. That way, you know, anybody can skip over this if they don't want to. Maybe I'll come back and insert a time right here. There you go. So jump to that time if you want to just miss all of Comic Book Club. If not, if you want to hear about the Manhattan Project, then keep listening. Don't press fast forward. Otherwise, you might not find your place again. So I read the Manhattan Project, Volume 1.
Yeah. As like, did I.
I did too.
And when I got to the end of Volume 1, I wanted to start reading Volume 2 right away. I felt like it was a... I guess they wrapped up their story, but I just wanted to keep reading what was happening next.
Yeah, I found myself in the same situation. I got to the last page. I'm like, no, this can't be the end.
Right.
I want more.
Unlike... the Tales from Vascula Station.
We don't have to rehash old wounds. Don't have to rub salt.
But coincidentally
in a festering
enough,
this
came from the same company. I mean, Image. Top Cow's an Image imprint, yep. And so it was an Image book, and The Manhattan Projects was an Image book. But this was, I really enjoyed reading this.
It had many distinctive things about it. The high contrast palettes and the inking, the kind of simplistic, I thought of Hank Hill and Hank's old father. I don't know if it's father-in-law, the guy that... like had his knees shortened due to war injuries.
Oh, and that
King of the Hill.
Over the Hill.
King of the Hill. A couple of characters made me think of the King of the Hill animation style.
So we're going to spoil the fuck out of this.
Yeah, that's what we do.
So if
that is our shtick.
That's our shtick. We're not good for nothing but spoiling your good time. Yeah, so the art had that kind of, I don't want to say simplicity, because it's really not. It had that almost hominess. It wasn't super slick.
Yeah.
It wasn't super slick. I mean, the colors were good, but they weren't fantastic. The drawing style was very, I want to say tangible. You know, it didn't look like it was drawn by somebody who did what you couldn't do. This was not like an over-the-top... Todd McFarlane type art. This wasn't like, you know, or Disney slick.
So who were the artists? On the cover, it says Hickman Patera.
Mm-hmm.
I assume one's or both is the writer / artist.
Yeah, Nick Patera is the artist, and the colors were by Jordi Belair. So a pretty small crew there.
Yeah.
Then you got the letters by Russ Wooten. Letters are always the unsung heroes or villains of almost any comic book. Because if the letters do their job, you don't notice them.
Now that's the people that put the words in the balloons.
Yeah.
Yeah, the letters.
And
but
they also place a balloon and cover up your artwork.
Okay.
Depending on the workflow.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't. Sometimes, you know, the artist comes in and they make the word. It depends if they have the script or not. Everybody's workflow is a little bit different, so I don't understand. Yeah, I don't know their specific workflow. But, yeah, it's always safer just to draw the whole panel. I remember learning that many years ago. You know, but sometimes you'll get, like, you'll have to fit this words in or whatever. Depends on where you are on the food chain, too, as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not important and you're a film and if the words are already there and they say, oh, you need this much space. I don't think anybody does that anymore.
So, the story is set in kind of a parallel universe, taking place during, around, after, before World War II.
Mm-hmm. Starts in the 30s.
Yeah. And it's focusing around the scientist and the Pentagon general that's trying to control them, wrangle them, motivate them.
It's an interesting twist on the popular scientists that we all know. You know, we all think of these almost giant eggheads, right? These guys that had the weight of everything on their shoulders, and they were the responsible scientist breaking new ground and doing the unimaginable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oppenheimer, Einstein, those guys.
Yeah.
Feynman.
Feynman is a big role in this one, and he should. But they're all quirky and weird.
The Oppenheimer is more than quirky.
Yeah, he's kind of psychotic.
Well, the Oppenheimers... The Oppenheimers.
Uh-huh.
It's, there's two.
Yeah.
At least.
Well, there's many.
Yeah.
But the Oppenheimer that we meet here is quickly replaced by a psychotic, cannibalistic brother who apparently has a superpower, and that is to devour the sentience of his victims and then constantly interact with them in his mind. Some of the best scenes are when Oppenheimer's there with his many other selves while something's going on. Nobody else sees these many other selves. And he's just a stone-cold lunatic.
Yeah, this was one of the weirdest books I've read. And I've read a lot of books.
Now, weird in a good way? In your opinion?
Yeah, are you going to read the second?
I read the second one.
Did you? Yeah, I was, as you see, I was just
I read the second one. It's weird. It's kind of like a train wreck for me. Cuz I'm reading it and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Oh my God, I want to put this down, but I kind of want to see what's going to happen next.
It's a little bit of a gore comic. You know, what's gotten popular recently is the showing of the gore. You know, I think, is it William Gaines? I think William Gaines would be proud.
EC Comics?
Uh-huh. Because they were breaking ground all the time and fighting against the Comic Code Authority, right?
Well, he was pre-code.
He was totally against it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't playing those rules. Yeah. I mean, you get a bit of that gore feel in here. It's just going to be like, yeah... So I think the artist, in a couple instances, they wanted to show more of, like, you know, the cannibalism.
The ripping open the skull and slurping down the brain.
There was a lot of gruesome death. And in science, usually when you're breaking new ground, it's at a cost. You know, and it's easy to say, it's, well, they should have been more careful. But if you're doing things for the first time, how do you know to be careful?
Right.
You're being as careful as you know how.
You can't plan for something that you don't know.
Short of treating everyone and everything like they're radioactive cannibals. There's no way to be safe. And in this universe, this world, you should treat everybody like they're radioactive cannibals.
Because many of them probably are.
Yes. I'm trying to find the page with the cast that you have. Is that the very beginning?
It's the very end.
Yeah, it's 139. Page 139. Yeah, so what I found fascinating was taking these giants of physics in research, Oppenheimer, Einstein, Feynman, Fermi, von Braun, and... giving them different dimensions, giving them ruthless natures and personality disorders and psychoses and neuroses and just letting them spin completely out of control.
Yeah, it is over the top. And then Harry S. Truman, one of the leaders of the Illuminati, You gotta love that. Was it? It was the end of the, it was toward the end of the fifth issue, when the Illuminati's bringing the hammer down. When the old world order is like trying to bring the hammer down on the new world order, and they catch him in the midst of an orgy in the White House Oval Office.
Yeah, that was an interesting panel.
Yeah, that's not your typical comic fare.
No, so
orgies in the White House.
Orgies. Well, that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, with JFK and Bill Clinton. Probably with W, too, but... his friends own the newspapers.
Yeah, I think W is just a little bit more selective about the people that he let in.
Well, I think his friends own the newspapers, so they don't get out. You know whose friends didn't own the newspapers? Bill Clinton's.
So the... the crazy interdimensional transcendental metaphysical science robots ninja monks everything. It was I loved it.
Yes, you know, we know, at least I hope you guys all know, because it's really true. I mean, when we get off the planet, we're going to be the cockroaches of the galaxy, of the universe. You're not going to get us out of everywhere. But we're going to go infest a place, and then we're going to kill whatever we can. We're going to treat the universe like the Old West, like the settlers treated the Native Americans. You know? You're in our way. We want what you got. Here, have some smallpox. Or in one instance here, have some radiation.
The only good engine is a dead engine.
The only good alien is a dead alien.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to go out there and we're going to rape, kill, and exploit everything that we possibly can. Until we run into something that is bigger and badder than us and throws us down on our stomach and rips us multiple.
Yeah, the only thing that's going to do that is the Borg. And if you believe some, you know, scientists, we are the Borg. We're in the process of making that first step right now.
Yeah. We've started our genetic engineering. We've started
our push to AI.
Our Android.
Yeah, we really want AI because we are AI. Absolutely sure that's going to fix everything. It's not going to be Deus Ex Machina. It's going to be, what's the Latin for is? God is the machine. You know, because by the time, you know, we put computers in our brains and we teach the computers to think better for us, that's it. Game over, man. Ray Kurzweil says.
I just want to be able to implant an artificial intelligence in my penis.
Well, I have one in my penis.
No. It's not intelligent.
It thinks it is. It's artificially intelligent.
It has a mind of its own, but it is not intelligent.
Yeah, no, I guess it's...
I want mine to know better.
Mine's the biological equivalent of a Roomba.
To make intelligent choices.
Just goes around poking into things. Getting into trouble, backing off, trying someplace else.
Do I fit there? Well, no, not really.
So...
let's backtrack a little bit. Oh, yeah, that's better.
So, yeah. The technological singularity is the Kurzweilian school of thought, and we're getting close. If we can breach the AI barrier, we can do sophisticated almost seemingly.
Well, I mean, the singularity is not limited to artificial intelligence. There's a lot of things that could become singularities. If we discovered warp drive technology, that event would be a singularity.
But I mean, the Kurzweil technological singularity, what brings man and machine together, and ultimately the drive is to conquer and control everything.
But a singularity is nothing more than a point
beyond which you
cannot retreat. You can't go back. As one singularity that we've already had happen was nuclear weapons. Pandora's out of the box. Nuclear weapons are real. They exist. We can make them. We can't unmake them. We
Unless
can't
you're Iran.
Undo.
And you're not allowed. You can't join the club.
We can limit who joins the club, but we can never put that knowledge back in the box. We can't stop her, the genie.
Well, not once it's on the internet.
So everybody knows how to make nuclear weapons. It's just a matter of whether your hardware is sophisticated enough to do it. You have to enrich uranium. You have to develop some sort of implosion device that causes the target to split, to fission. And then if you get really advanced, you can use the fissioning stuff to create a fusion reaction. And then you get H-bombs and stuff like that. So
fun stuff.
Yeah, hopefully I just didn't blow my security clearance. So
now all that is on the internet.
Yeah.
And you did not once recite a singular formula or a location to get such a thing.
A singularity is really just a point that once you pass it, you cannot retreat, you can't undo it. And the machine singularity is a singularity. Warp drive would be another singularity. Mm-hmm. Once we discover warp drive and we're able to leap vast distances through the stars, it would forever change the trajectory of the human race. I could name other stuff, but we're digressing. So,
oh, you're digressing. We're just letting.
I'm digressing.
But we're supposing that even artificial intelligence, in the way that we super science fantasy thinks about it, is even possible.
I definitely think it's possible.
Well, I think us growing wings and flying is possible, too, but it's not probable. Not unless you eat a lot of radioactive, cannibalized meat.
If you've read Robert Heinlein's book, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, he has a spin on artificial intelligence that it's going to be spontaneous and accidental, and that even after it happens, it's going to be fragile, and we're not going to be able to reproduce it.
Well, he was obsessed with sex.
Well, he was obsessed with a lot of things, but...
this artificial intelligence didn't really have anything to do with sex.
No, but the... the parallels. Accidental. Me. Anyway. Like pregnancy.
Yeah.
Accidental.
And you have the random combination of DNA to yield.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I think that's where he even got that idea from.
So, artificial intelligence is an accidental blending of machines, networks, neural connections that spontaneously arises, but is at the same time extremely fragile. I mean, in the story, Moon is a Harsh Mistress, the AI becomes destroyed because enough of its parts become compromised. And in the end, they try to recreate the AI, but they can't do it. The spark isn't there. The randomness that led up to the AI's creation, they can't reproduce it.
Like the first caveman with fire?
They just...
You know, the nature made it for them. They had it burns out and, you know, your SOL. Because you thought you were a badass because you had fire.
Yeah.
But you didn't make it, so you didn't deserve it.
You didn't know where it came from. You just... maybe picked it up, carried it around for a little bit, and then it burnt out.
Like most people with their iPhones. They don't understand the technology, but man, it makes them feel smart when they touch the screen. And if it broke, they wouldn't know how to fix it. If you didn't show them what cord to use to get a new power, they wouldn't know how to do that.
Like 99% of the customers that you support on a daily basis.
So you're saying that pretty much the internet is AI right now. It's the closest thing we have to AI.
Well, what I'm saying is that the internet has the potential, because of all these interconnections, and to spontaneously give rise to an AI.
So all we got to do is hook up the right computer to the internet.
The right computer to the internet.
At the right time. At the right time.
Now, in most of your robopocalypse sort of stories, once the AI comes into existence, you can't destroy it. You try chopping off a leg and it just moves. It shifts to another component. I'm not entirely certain that's going to be the way that it happens.
Because it's going to be like a human body where if all you have to do is kill a little percentage of it and then it stops being what it is?
Yeah, I think so. You poke, if you poke the human skull in the right place,
the rest of the body ain't going to move no matter what kind of good condition it's in.
Yeah. You cease to exist. If you insert a 1 millimeter wide shaft in the right place in the eye socket, and you cease to exist, your consciousness disappears. Your body might keep working. Your heart might keep beating.
It's interesting.
Your lungs might keep inflating and deflating, and respiration continues.
But here's a thought.
The spark goes out.
Right. Well, maybe like Wikipedia is that 1 little millimeter shaft,
mm-hmm.
and all we have to do is disconnect it from the internet. And it would come alive again. Or it's like Reddit. It's so incredibly full of bad, no matter how much good it has in it, that it's stopping it from living and being, you know, intelligent. What website is so huge that it's killing the intelligence that would otherwise be there?
Well, I mean, Facebook leaps to mind.
Facebook is killing artificial intelligence. It's the prophylactic of AI.
Yes. It is the sperm barrier that is keeping the natural evolution from occurring.
Facebook is AI what's that word? The diaphragm.
Diaphragm.
Diaphragm. Facebook is the internet's diaphragm. So I think we got away from the Manhattan. I'm just going to say it was a good read. Definitely read it. It's weird as heck. Don't read it if you are in love with Albert Einstein, because you won't be anymore.
Well, any of the figures that they mention. I mean, if you have a particular attachment to Feynman and Fermi and von Braun and
Oppenheimer. Yeah, I mean, I know Oppenheimer's a legend, right? You know, to people.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody's sacred.
Yeah, I think it cast a fairly disparaging light on the entire human race.
And aliens, too.
I think that's probably why I didn't love this.
Oh, because there was no good guys?
There was nothing that said there's something to look forward to. It was all down the whole time.
You are meat for the machine. You will know your place and advance the machine, but your place will never advance.
And
you can't eat your meat if you don't have any pudding.
No, you can't have any pudding if you don't eat your meat.
Well,
Oppenheimer can. He will eat your meat. and the rest of you. And there's some, so the super science in it is kind of fun, you know, the replace with the robotic limbs or the irradiated Doglin, the brains that are floating in a jar on top of the humanoid heads. It's really all the stuff you want to see in a super science fantastic kind of dark and grisly murder world.
So I don't know I found it more appealing just because I already have an extremely low opinion of the human race. So to me, this was just like, yeah, that's how we are. We're evil. We're murderous. Yeah. We're.
I gotta say, I didn't have a problem with how dark it was because I just kind of took it for like, it figures.
Yeah. You know, I can see that you guys are both going to recommend this book. I'm going to go the other way. I'm not going to recommend it. I think it's... I don't have a problem with dark.
Mm-hmm. But you read the second book already.
Yeah, I did. Because I'm
into train wrecks. Evidently, it was intriguing enough. You know, you watched... name a movie. The Human Centipede. You watch Human Centipede 1, and then you watched Human Centipede 2 because...
Hell, I gotta watch Human Centipede 3 soon.
You can call it a train wreck. You can call it effective marketing. You can call it whatever you want. But
it's morbid curiosity.
Yeah, that's basically what drew me to book 2.
Uh-huh. Sometimes you want to see... You know, it's the whole reason people go see Final Destination. And any slasher flick, what they want to see is people cut open. They want to see gratuitous violence. They want to see the thing they don't see in their regular everyday life, where they don't, and they don't feel bad because it's not really happening.
There was nothing in this book that made me feel good. Book 2 actually had one character who I didn't dislike.
The problem is when you're rooting for the Nazi at the end, you know everything's fucked up.
Yeah.
When the Nazi is the victim, like at the end, the one who has to keep the portal open, and that gets bit by the dog.
That's book 2, isn't it?
I don't think so. Maybe. Yeah, I couldn't put it down. You're right. You're right. Never mind.
Book 2.
Poor Nazi. Spoiler for book 2.
Damn you. I haven't read it yet.
Well, I just said bit, so. Oh, yeah. Book 1 ended with the alien decimation,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Book 1 ended with them...
murdering the aliens.
Irradiating an entire race of aliens.
Yeah. We slaughtered the embassies of an alien race. Now, the truth is that embassy probably was extremely hostile to us.
Well, the giveaways were what they were.
Yeah.
They were. They had, apparently, that the...
they had just slaughtered another race.
A friendly race towards us.
Yes.
The gray skinnies.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that are popular believed to, like, absorb humans in, like, that gel goo when they...
The ones who probe us.
Yeah, yeah. The ones that are, like, torturing us. Apparently, in this universe, the Greys were friendly towards us.
Well, they were weak.
Yeah, obviously. And then these guys came in and killed all of them. And they said, hey, humans, you have this special door thing that Einstein made, right? We need that. We need that. Give that to us, and we probably won't kill you. Like, way to negotiate. It's like Donald Trump's school of negotiating. So, we kill them all. There you go. I mean, that's what we're going to do when we go to space anyways. You have technology we want. Here, have some smallpox blankets.
Now, smallpox works both ways. Our biomes are going to conflict with the biome of any alive species that we encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So not only can the Martians be killed by our bugs, but we can be killed by the Martians' bugs.
So what we got to do is just keep making ourselves sicker and not use antibiotics.
Exactly.
Make ourselves the most, like, pig pen of microbes and everything all over us.
The cattle industry is killing us. They're breeding super bugs that are antibiotic resistant by using antibiotics just to make their cows survive.
Right, so they don't have to...
So they don't have to care for them. So they don't have to, you know, allow them to stand up or walk around or breathe air.
And then whatever hormones they give them, they make them bigger and bigger. And that's why humans are being born bigger and bigger. We're becoming cows.
It's one theory, yeah.
We're becoming cows.
Well, I think we've already become cows.
I think the United States, the average American citizen has been on the fast track to becoming a cow with the baby boomers.
Yeah, so to quote a favorite person of mine, we are becoming moo stupid.
Sheeple. The kind that don't buy comic books.
We are becoming so stupid that if we look up in a rainstorm, we'll drown.
I'm smart enough to get out of the rain.
Twitter. Twitter is like the most important place on the internet.
You know, I really
go to Twitter.
I haven't been able to really get into Twitter.
To get into. That's why it's the most important, most popular place on the internet. 140 characters, go! Okay. It's even more popular than Wikipedia. You know what's the most... So the most popular destination on the internet to get your facts is Wikipedia. And it's an entire destination made up of stuff where people make up stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can get to, like, encyclopedias and real things on the internet, but why? I'm just going to go to the site where I can make this shit up. They said it was a good place to go to on Twitter. Well, like, I was reading CNN, I think I posted on my Twitter that, you know, I made fun of some of the CNN stories for, like, getting most of their stories content from Twitter. And then yesterday they posted a story where most of the content was pulled from Yelp reviews.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like journalism was set at a high bar when I was in school and in journalism. It's gotten much, much lower. I would like to see the news programs now and the sections they teach on using Twitter and citing those as sources, because apparently that's what CNN does. Twitter, your source for news on CNN. I don't understand any of this. You know, imagine popular events from world history. If they were done now, we would be getting, like, you know, our feeds from Twitter. It'd be like, oh my God, the president has just been shot. Did you see the Twitter? And then, you know, man walks on the moon, brought to you by Kellogg's and Twitter. And it's going to happen. It's going to be, wow, what is the first tweet? You remember that tweet when aliens finally came down and introduced themselves to us? They demanded we install Kim Kardashian as our leader. Kanye West became queen that day.
I might be able to get on board with that.
Kim Kardashian as our leader?
Yes.
Would be more sincere and truthful than what's actually going on. Well, we might get that if we actually open up the... or force everybody in America to vote like they're talking about. And I know this has come up before. Like, some countries have mandatory voting. That's why you get crazy elections like in Brazil or whatever.
Yep.
You've seen those. You know, people are talking about mandatory voting for Americans. And
as long as corporations have the ability to influence our election with unseemly amounts of money, that's not going to happen.
But what they're missing is that if you had mandatory voting, where everyone had, say you did, everyone had an absentee ballot that you mailed in, right? That's the only way you can enforce mandatory voting. I mean, you give everybody an absentee ballot by default, and the people who want to vote on vote election day can...
No, you simply make it mandatory that all smartphone carriers include a voting app on their phone.
Right. Corporations will have so much more pull in the elections because you'll like see advertisements on TV where it's like L'Oreal for Kim Kardashian for president. She's a L'Oreal, right? Whatever.
I don't know.
I don't pay attention to the Kardashians.
Well, you should. They're going to be your leader when the aliens come and install Kim.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Watch your Twitter. It might happen.
Yep.
So you'll get the crazy elections, and the corporations will have much more pull. I mean, when McDonald's backs you as their candidate of choice, and they name a Happy Meal after you, you're going to be good for like 20% of the vote right there.
The Happy Gilmore Meal. Brought to you by McDonald's and Adam Sandler.
Yeah, everyone thought it was funny when Ronald Reagan became president. He's wait for the train wrecks that become president after we get mandatory voting. Like, seriously, the top 10 most popular people will be our top candidates. It'd be Kim Kardashian and Miley Cyrus, the top two candidates, and both of them will be running to legalize marijuana.
And you know, I might be able to get behind that.
Okay, so I think we've digressed away from that. I'm going to recommend Manhattan Projects. It's a fun read. It's an awful horror-based comic. It says science, but I really think it's horror-based. I mean, given the large amount of cannibalism in it, the psychoses, and the massive amounts of murder and gore, I'm going to call it a horror comic.
Yeah, carnage, blood spurt, bombs, aliens, decapitations. It's got it all.
So I'm going to recommend picking that up, and I'm going to continue to read the rest of the volumes.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely... How many volumes are there right now?
I think there's 3 collected volumes.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm looking to pick up volume 2 and 3 as soon as possible.
Yeah. If you're looking for something that's even remotely feel good, steer clear. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you could say the same about much of the DC universe right now. Not a feel-good place.
Lock and Key wasn't necessarily feel-good.
Not feel-good.
There were characters that were at least likable.
That's true. Well, I liked Oppenheimer.
Yep.
I mean, until he killed people he liked. And I liked Oppenheimer until he was killed by his evil
cannibal Einstein
brother.
Didn't do it. Anything.
He's a jerk. Einstein's a jerk.
He was just an asshat.
But so is at least one of the people at this table. So we still associate with him.
Harry Truman's crazy. I'm not sure he's very fun. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on Feynman. You know, what's he going to do? Is this just his character?
What is his major malfunction?
He's relatively likable.
Yeah, but he's got...
Something's wrong with him. There's got to be, because he's in this book.
Yeah. And those positive affirmations, creepy people do those.
Yeah.
If you wake up anymore saying, I'm smart, I'm good looking, and gosh darn it, people like me. You got issues. Deep issues. Deep, deep issues.
But, yeah. I don't know if I can get behind this 100%.
Okay, so on the triangle, we have 2 thumbs up and 1...
Meh.
Is that a horizontal thumb? Yeah. Or is that a thumbs down?
I'm not going to lambast it, but... I'm not going to say go out and get this.
Okay. So we have two thumbs up and one.
Yeah, I'm definitely recommending go out, get this. Watch super scientists become cannibalistic murderers and commit genocide.
And, you know, for some people, that may qualify as a feel-good read.
Well, usually the only people that you think of genocide as a feel-good thing are, like, Nazis. But they got those in
they
here, so,
those,
if you like Nazis, there you go. And they all don't get their comeuppance. So then there's a couple Nazis in here that definitely come out on top.
Oh yeah.
So if you're a Nazi sympathizer and you want to feel good about Nazis, well, you probably never got to this podcast. But if you are, you're going to enjoy this book, unless there's a twist at the end. But we're not up to there yet. Okay. So I'm still been on the lookout for the Lay's Do Us a Flavor chips.
Yeah.
Have not found them. They said the voting opens this next week, and they're supposed to be on sale now.
And so how can you vote if you can't taste them?
That's what I'm saying. It's a lie. It's a shoo-in. Just like every time. That's why my flavors weren't chosen. My flavors were the best. Smart Bomb. Because it bombs your taste buds. Peanut Butter.
Peanut Butter?
Mm-hmm. It was my peanut butter potato chip. Wouldn't that be awesome? If they make the cappuccino, they can make a peanut butter chip.
They could. Cappuccino didn't win.
No, but they made it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happy if they made peanut butter. It doesn't have to win. It would win because I'd buy all the bags. Like, you took a second out on your house. Why? I bought all the bags. All of them. I have 50,000 bags in my house.
Well, depending on what the shelf life is, you know, that could be a decent investment.
I would be vacuum sealing one of the rooms. I'd put them in my garage and then vacuum seal the garage.
Well, I believe potato chips have a half-life, so you should be okay.
Like 24,000 years.
Yeah.
It's like a Twinkie. Aw, Twinkies. We haven't done a Twinkie test in a long time. Weren't we supposed to do the cupcake one? I don't think we've done the cupcake test yet.
I don't think we did cupcakes.
You are the director of food tasting, so.
I know. We haven't done cupcakes. We've done the Ding Dongs.
Yes, we did Ding Dongs.
And we did the cupcake. We did the Twinkies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we did the Swiss Rolls.
Definitely.
The Ho-Hos. I say Swiss Rolls because the Swiss Rolls won. We need to do cupcakes. So we'll have that coming up soon.
Okay.
So next week on Comic Club, I guess if we're taking turns, we're back to Jason.
Yeah, I found something that I haven't read yet, but looked really interesting. It's called Witches. WYTCHES, Volume 1. It's a nice little horror comic written by Scott Snyder and illustrated by Jock.
Tusto.
Nope, just Jock. Just first and last, Jock.
Okay.
Yeah, WYTCHES.
Written by Scott Snyder?
Yep.
Okay, so I've got Witches Volume 1.
Yep.
Wow, it's inexpensive on Amazon. $4.99 for Volume 1.
And it runs about 192 pages.
Okay, pretty long.
Wait, are you sure this is a... Oh, it's a comic, okay.
Oh, it's Image again. We've been hitting nothing but Image.
Well, then you can take your turn to fix that next week. The thing is, Image makes a lot of creator properties.
Yeah.
They're pretty much your indie go-to company now, because you can't make a comic these days and stand out. It's super hard. But an Image does a lot of creator-owned work. So if you got something and Image thinks it'll sell, they'll take you under their umbrella. They'll divvy up the meager pennies that you actually do make from selling it. And at least you don't have to put it out. You don't have to front the bill putting it out there. Because I don't know about you, but I'm looking at printing for issue one of the Bunny Rabbit Tragedies, the comic to go with. And it still hurts.
Yep.
You know, even if you find a Chinese company to print from, and I found a couple, you know, you've got the long wait and everything, but you still have that initial outlay of, you know, $1,500 to $2,000. Yeah. So,
and then you're hoping you can make that up on the back end.
Yeah, you hope you can make it back. I mean, you're not making money. So that's why I'm hoping when I go to press, the show has enough traction to get some pre-orders for the book in, because that would be nice. If not, I'm going to do the low print run and just be selling them at the table for hopefully kamikaze, but, you know, I have a tendency to get a little bit ahead of myself. Oh, and another interesting point on all that, I'll get back to in a bit. So Witches Volume 1, it's available on Amazon right now. I don't know if they have Prime, but because right that one says shipped in whatever weeks. But you can definitely find a seller in the new used right there. So that's cool. So we'll be that. We'll be reading The Witches and talking about it next week.
Yeah. Joe Hill said it was scary, so I'm down.
So Jason is Joe Hill's number one fan.
One of them.
So there you go. Okay, so I was talking about like October coming up being interesting. Well, I had a talk with my nutritionist at the weight loss surgery center today.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me that the way she understands it is that I am going to have to be counseled for 6 months before they okay me for the surgery.
Okay. So that's programming in a little bit of a speed bump.
Another setback. It's been like a bunch.
Yeah.
Because I built in those speed bumps myself before I had decided to do this. You know, I talked about it for a long time. And then around the new year, I said, I'm going to do it this year. And then I really rolled it over and over and read and learned a lot about it. You know, upon deciding to do it, I then went back to learn about it as a way that all of this is going to affect me. Because there's a difference when you read about something in the abstract and then you read about something and this is going to be your life. You know, you have a different take on it. You give it more attention. So by the time I went around to actually doing it was the end of April, and my first meeting was May 2nd. You know, May 2nd, I'm like, I'm ready to go because I've done all my research. The doctor's telling me stuff that I already know. So I'm like, okay.
Now, the majority of the customers probably have not done the extensive amount of research that you have. And they may be wandering into the doctor's office thinking, I'll give this weight loss surgery a try. What the hell? Why not?
They're cutting shit out of you, man. That's dumb.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you listen to our earlier parts of our conversation on the show, we've pretty much come to the consensus that human beings are becoming cattle.
Yeah, well, you'd think then that the big companies would want their cattle to be well taken care of. Just move them through that fat surgery assembly line.
I think what they're interested in doing is trying to assure that the investment that they make in you is not going. They're looking at you as a financial investment. Your healthcare company is about to invest tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars into your well-being. And the doctors and the counseling, it's their way of underwriting their investment.
Yeah, and the nutritionist, the talk that I had with the nutritionist was probably one of the better ones. And, yeah, even I felt she was phoning in all the questions, you know, because she's got stuff. She's got points. She's got hits. She's got a whole lot of people she's got to work with and a lot of calls to make, and she's got to make sure they all understand this, and this, and get through this. And now the surgery, these nutrition things are going to be for, like, 6 months. And I'm talking to her, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I've been dieting and I've lost a little weight since I started going there, just because I know what points I need to hit. I'm doing the vertical sleeve gastrectomy. That's the plan. So you got to get your eating under control. You've more importantly got to be mindful of your eating. You know, yeah, you want to eat healthy stuff, but what you want to get away from is the behavior that will mess up the vertical sleeve gastrectomy. Now, if they reduce your stomach size to like 20% of the stomach, sure, you're not going to be able to eat a whole hamburger, right? It's going to stop you. You're going to get full. You're going to throw up, whatever. But you know what that little 20% size of the stomach is not going to stop? Which is a lot of been my problem with this whole time is like constant grazing.
Mm-hmm.
If you eat a lot of calories in super tiny amounts, you know what surgery is not going to work for you? Vertical sleeve gastrectomy. If you eat Snickers fun size minis all day long, you're going to be able to. This surgery is not going to stop you at all. You've got to not eat all day long. You know, you have your multiple meals that are bigger than the whatever pouch that you have left. That way it triggers that full feeling and you stop eating. So if you've got the psycho thing, like we talked about, if you've got the I eat when I'm mad or I eat when I'm upset and I eat to feel good, if you do that, it's going to be tough to get over because you still have to address that because that's going to make you heavy, make you fat. Fat's not a bad word. People are fat. It's like saying skinny's a bad word. I hear that all the time. People are like, oh, you can't call someone fat because that's mean and hurts their feelings. And fat's an adjective, man. I mean, whatever connotation we assign to it, that's on us. You know, it's like saying tall is bad. Dude, you're tall. Oh, don't be mean. But we do it with short, right? Short is almost practically an insult. Tom Cruise can't be short. He's heroic. Fucker's short. He's still awesome. We know. I think Tom Cruise is awesome. He's a short motherfucker. You know, I'm fat. Fat people are fat. Fat people aren't husky. No, some fat people are husky.
I'm big boned.
Yeah, that's not all fat people are big boned. I'm pretty big boned, but still, my bones aren't soft and gushy. So those are the things that you got to deal with. So that's what I've been working on. You know, make sure you don't constantly graze in small amounts. That will be detrimental to. I mean, it's going to negate everything. Just like my surgeon was telling me. Don't drink chocolate shakes. Don't drink high caloric drinks because that's going to pass right through. You're going to get all those calories. You know, you've got to eat foods that are healthy, voluminous, that fill up that pouch. Now, if I didn't know all this, then I would think I need a nutritional thing. If this wasn't going to be the third time in my freaking life that I have to lose 100 pounds or more, maybe I would need this. But, you know I need the help. And I know I need the help with the long-term maintenance. Because as I told the woman before, I lost 177 pounds when I was 25. I slowly gained. I kept it off for a long time. But then I gained it back. Then I had to lose it again. And I lost it in a different way. You know, both of the times I lost it on diet. And then I got hurt. And whatever, it came back.
Well, there's something else happening here. You lost 177 pounds when you were
25.
You lost another amount of weight when you were
37.
How old are you now?
45.
As you get older, your body changes, your metabolism changes, it gets harder and harder. The things that I do now, I would be dropping weight like crazy if it were 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, I'm almost 50, and the stuff that I did when I was 35, that I was dropping crazy weight, I'm barely maintaining. Barely maintaining and slowly creeping up. So I have to retool the way that I'm thinking. I have to look at things that I did 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, and say, I can't do those anymore. I am no longer 25, 35. I'm no longer 45. I am now way too damn close to 50. And I'm going to have to make some major changes if I'm going to look at dropping any weight. Because what I've been doing for the past 5 or 10 years is barely maintaining and creeping up slowly.
Yeah, and they say, you know, as you get older, a more vegan diet is definitely better for you.
Fuck vegan.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. It's no fat, it's no carbs. I mean, you really want a pure gluten-free vegan diet.
Let's establish something. Vegetables are carbohydrates. They're complex carbohydrates.
Yeah, they're not Twinkie carbohydrates.
Right.
They're not Twinkies, sugar carbohydrates.
Twinkies are simple carbohydrates.
Sugar carbohydrates are bad.
Yes, they are.
And so it's like the white bread stuff that turns the sugar in your body real fast.
Mm-hmm.
You got to avoid that kind of thing.
Now, on a daily basis, I snack about 2 o'clock in the afternoon every day. I eat a bag of baby carrots.
Speaking of sugar.
They're raw. They're not cooked.
Full of fiber.
Full of fiber. They fill me up. It's a complex carb. And it helps to keep me from reaching for the Snickers bar, which is what I really want. I want that Snickers.
Now, if you buy that Snickers, you can do what I do. You know, okay, because I don't think of myself as a success, but...
Are you inserting the Snickers rectally?
Not a thought. I have it with me all the time. I'm absorbing it in small amounts through the membranes in my anus. It's a Snickers high.
It's a Snickers bong.
But what I'll do in those instances, I'll buy the candy bar from the vending machine, and I will open it up, and I will smell it, and I will take a half bite. Not a bite. I won't take a bite. I won't, like, say, this is the one bite. So I take one of those bites that, like, are over half the candy bar. I won't. And I won't take a normal bite. I'll take, like, a half bite. I will eat it. And I will unwrap that Snickers and throw it in the trash to make sure that it gets covered in trash and go into the landfill for future generations.
No, if I buy a Snickers, there are no microbites. There are no half bites. It's getting consumed. It's getting enjoyed.
Well, because if I don't sate a craving, I will consume the Snickers and all of his buddies. And anybody that looked at him when he was looking especially delicious will be eaten as well.
See, I can't. I'm such a cheap bastard that I can't buy a Snickers and throw most of it away. I can't do that with any kind of food item.
It was practice. It took a lot of practice to be able to do that, to learn that I need to, like, do a healthy thing, but at the same time give in to that mental craving. Because sometimes the craving is mental. Once you see that Snickers, you think of that Snickers. You're thinking about that Snickers. Oh, that Snickers looks pretty delicious. I bet you that Snickers feel really good in my butt. But it would be tasting better in my mouth. So then you're thinking about it. Snickers, butt, Snickers, mouth, Snickers, butt, Snickers, mouth. Now whenever you see a Snickers, you're going to say, man, would that even fit my butt? You know you're going to think about it, and you're never going to admit it. You're going to pass by Snickers with your wife, and you're going to just start laughing, and she's going to say, what? And you're going to say, nothing. You'll be a little bit aroused. I can't look at a vending machine anymore. He's getting chubby.
Man, that Snickers is visceral.
It's got that. Yes, it is. That design on the top. Yeah, it's veined for your pleasure. So now at the Christmas time, when you see those big 1 pound Snickers, they look like giant Snickers dildos. If you warm it up, you could shape it to fit. Thinking about this way too much.
So obviously they need to have gently tapered Snickers.
Ladies and gentlemen, now you can have the dildo you can eat. It's filled with nuts like you deep like you want. It's not so squirrely.
Okay. So, let's talk about puppets.
Well, and that brings me back to, if I'm looking at that 6 month waiting period, then I am looking at an October surgery. And you know what happens in October? We have Kamikaze.
And Halloween. Followed shortly by Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yeah, I'll have an interesting holiday food season. I'm really actually okay with the holiday food seasons, you know, but those first few weeks afterwards, after the surgery, you know, the liquid diet, that's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah.
But mostly I was thinking about Kamikaze post-surgery. You know, you're cleared for, like, regular real life after a few days. I mean, you go back to work the next day. They keep you overnight,
mm-hmm.
and they make you drink a solution to check for leaks. Barium, I think it is. Barium?
Sure. Some probably. Radioactive substance mm-hmm.
That'll show up on the
show
scans.
Show high contrast mm-hmm. in scans. And
so after you're cleared, though, you know, you're recovering. You have to put, like, four holes inside, you know, in your stomach so they can do the surgery with it laparoscopically.
Okay.
In your lap?
Sure. It's a borescope. It's a fiber optic camera. They're going to cram in a hole and
then shove other utensils in there, right. and they cut you, and they staple you, and they put a little baggie in you, and they put your stomach in the baggie, and they pull it out through your...
At this point, CJ is gesturing emphatically with his hands, making snipping and probing motions.
Well, I was doing that when I was talking about the Snickers, too, but... Mostly with the probing muscles.
Some of that didn't need to be enunciated.
So people get sore and stuff, they say. So if it's really close to the Kamikaze date, I might not be such a cheerful, happy guy.
Now, is there flexibility? Could you schedule the surgery for after Kamikaze?
Probably, but I could also schedule it. So I got to see when, you know, all the stars have to come into alignment. So the main star.
You mean like Tom Cruise?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he could be there too. I mean, he can leave Xenu wherever he is. Okay. But, you know. So the stars that have to align are the surgeon schedule and the insurance company okay. And it's my dietitian's write off to them, and then my schedule. Well, my schedule I can fit.
Now, is your dietitian opposed to payola? Can you slip her $100 bill and say, just nod your head and look pretty?
Well, I hope so, but she says, that, when I was talking to her about that, you know, she said that we could push it if. You know, because my BMI is pretty high right now. Because, you know, I'm over 300 pounds, so.
Yeah.
Being 5'9", that puts you at a pretty high BMI. So she's like, well, we can try to push it as a medical necessity.
But and you said, yes, please do.
I did. I did. But she says sometimes they're just play hardball with their scheduling and requirements. So it's really up to them if they find my super high BMI enough to go ahead and skip the waiting period. But, you know, and I would think that my history of my weight going up and down like it has would be enough to show them that I've worked on the problem before. But it's just another thing that we've got to talk about, because my original patient rep, she told me, the consultant, she told me that she thought that there was a month waiting period, and now they're telling me it's 6 months, but we'll see. I'm working that out. But again, it's like another hurdle and another hurdle and another kick in the nuts when, you know, you're like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then, no, you're going to wait for this, you're going to wait for that. And then it was like the confusing paperwork with the billing, and that was coming in. That was horrible. That was horrifying, and they couldn't make sense out of that. We didn't fill anyone in here, but it looked like I was going to be filing bankruptcy for a couple of weeks there. Yeah, that's where we stand with the kamikaze. So I'm really going to try to get that surgery in the earliest part of October as possible. That way I can be recovered.
Okay, so speaking of kamikaze, have you been recruiting employees for the booth?
So someone to sit there for me when I'm not there, or with me when I'm there?
Well, I have a general admission ticket, so mm-hmm. I don't count against the
extra space.
The extra person that you're allowed to bring.
Well, tickets are still for sale, too. I mean, you still get 3 days for $55.
Yeah, and so I have a 3-day general admission pass. Have you...
I've never been to Kamikaze.
Recruited anybody else?
Yeah, so I'm...
Have you talked to anybody about whether they'd like to come join us at the table
for a Friday
Kamikaze?
Or a Saturday or a Sunday? Because what I would really like to do is afford people that opportunity. The people that are helping, like, you know, on occasion, I think we had another guy here helping us once in a while. We've had other people into...
There's this... I want to say his name was Adam...
Yeah, something like from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. And Adam thinks he's funnier than I am or something like that. But, you know, it's hard to tell because he hasn't been on the show.
Yeah, silence isn't that funny, is it?
Yeah. Absence is not funny.
No.
So
I haven't been to Kamikaze. I could maybe show up on a Friday.
Yeah.
I think more people, of the people that we do the podcast and work with, I think Friday's probably going to be the most requested day. Saturday's going to be a hard day. Saturday's the biggest day. Yep. When I mean hard, I mean Saturday we're going to be at the table looking pitiful as everybody walks by going, who are these idiots? What are those puppets doing with these old men? Keep
Hello,
the kids away
girl.
From that aisle. Why is there a big picture of that guy, the fat guy's face behind him?
So in addition to looking for talent and actors for your show, you need to be looking for willing participants for the booth experience.
The booth experience.
Yeah.
It's an experience.
Once you've gone booth, you'll never go back.
It's okay. That's a lot of silence right there.
I'm just trying to see how funny absence is.
Okay. And the point is that three people can man a booth, and, you know, one person can get up and go to the bathroom, and maybe another person can go off to a panel and then come back.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely break up the tedium and responsibility by being able to float.
Yeah.
It'll help a lot.
You have three guys sitting at the table, they can bullshit and basically make a 4-hour-long podcast.
Eight-hour-long
podcast.
We could just Twitch it or Periscope it or do whatever one of those live things are.
I think Periscope is the vehicle of choice right now.
Yeah, it is the latest hot thing.
Yeah.
But we'll have to bring our own access point, because I think everybody and their mother is going to be periscoping off the free Wi-Fi there.
Yeah, and I think most of your cell phone networks are going to be pretty saturated, too.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Until next week, everybody remember to do your reading homework. It's going to be Witches by Scott Snyder.
Yep.
And Jock.
And Jock. Jock or Jock?
Jock.
Jock.
J-O-C-K.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Desperate Mothers podcast. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for telling your friends. Thanks for hitting like and subscribe. I'm CJ Watson.
I'm Jason Rice.
And I am Jack Fisher.
Hop on.